Get real advice about anything from two women who've experienced a lot of life. They want to share their joy and knowledge of life with you. These two women are young enough to remember and old enough to know. And now the Chat with Women Network presents About Happiness with Carol Bailey.
Good morning, everyone. It's a what I call a silver Seattle morning. I drive across the bridge to come over here to the studio, and this morning the sky was silver with breaks of light coming through. The clouds were incredibly soft, and they were reflecting in the water. So the whole sky and just the whole landscape was this beautiful, beautiful, soft kind of silver color. So that's what I'm, and sitting here in the studio, we have big windows looking west over to the Olympic Mountains. So it's quite beautiful here this morning in the Pacific Northwest. This morning, the big thought, as with every show, I have a big thought and discuss that. And then I'll have a guest and generally ask the guest to comment on the big thought. And today I am extremely excited about talking with Lama Soltram Alioni. And Soltram is a Western woman who, since the age of about 18 or 19, has spent her entire life studying and practicing Buddhism and trying to integrate it into the West and into our culture in the West so that it could become something helpful here. And we'll be discussing that in depth later with her in a few minutes. So my big thought for today is that each person can actually become a great human being because we all have the power of reflection. We have the ability to think about things. And other animals don't have that ability. And I came to the big thought today because in the Sunday review of the New York Times last week, there was an article called The Brain on Love. And it was all about how human connection is so critical to our health and well-being. As the article says, scientific studies of longevity, medical and mental health, happiness, and even wisdom point to supportive relationships as the most robust predictor of these positive attributes in our lives across the lifespan. So not just in the short term, but in the long term, the power of a positive connection enhances your life in every single way. And I looked into this article a little more, and there's a man named Daniel Siegel, and he is a brain researcher and has come up with this incredibly powerful information, which is that our brains actually do change, and that over the course of a lifetime, you can change your own brain. And this is just extremely powerful to think about because sometimes we all think it's just the way I am, how I am, it's just how I am. But really, it's not true. And the brain research shows that we can actually change the structures in our brain by what we focus on. And that is why my big thought really is that we each can become a great human being. We can cultivate the human qualities that animals don't have. We can take the essential features of being a human being and focus on those and really, really work with ourselves to become a great person. And the qualities, one of the things Daniel Siegel, if you're interested in his work, you can look on TED, the TEDx Blue series online. And there's a couple of lectures where Dr. Siegel talks about what we know now about the brain and how it can change. And in particular, he's talking about the human qualities of empathy and compassion and concern, and that you can actually teach these qualities to children, and it really changes their brains. And as adults, we can focus on qualities like compassion and caring. And the more we focus on these, the more our brains change and adapt to those structures. And I have a really good friend whose name is Jerry Donnelly. And she, I know, wasn't really thinking about this as she went through her life, but she has spent so much time focusing on what needed to happen to be helpful, what the people around her needed, and had this amazing sense of compassion and caring. And because of that, she really is a great human being, just by focusing on those human qualities of caring. And I think that Jerry's a great example for other people, that if you think you're not a compassionate person, or you think, I'm just not a very empathetic person, you can become that. And now in our culture, in the old days, it used to be just religion was available to people to try to develop themselves as human beings. And this is one of the things that we're going to talk about in a minute with Lama Sultram. But now there are so many ways that people can go about developing the essential human features of their nature. Everywhere you go, you see yoga classes, meditation classes. There are an incredible number of magazines and journals that are talking about all kinds of spiritual practices. And so every person, even if you're a religious person, you can learn to meditate. Meditation is a non-religious activity, and it's not inconsistent with whatever worldview you may have adopted from your religion. And so we live in kind of a very, very fortunate time. Most people are focused on the negatives and how the world is falling apart and all these horrible things are happening. But actually, there's so much richness now. There's so much available to us. And the only thing that we really need to do is make a decision that we want to develop ourselves, that we want to become a great human being, and that we care about the essential features of being a human, that's what we're going to focus on. We're not going to focus on the things that we have in common with animals: violence, aggression, competition, all those things that divide us from each other. The one of the things also is there's a magazine called Tricycle, and this issue is really wonderful. There are articles in there about happiness. There are articles in there about making peace with your demons. There are short articles on how to have even a very brief meditation practice every day, 5 minutes or 9 minutes of meditation. And as my guest last month, Erica Rayner Horn, talked about, even a small daily meditation practice can make a huge difference in your mind and in your ability to be reflective. So that's my big thought for today, that each of us has an opportunity to develop into a great human being. And I think at the end, that's what everybody would really say they aspire to. I don't think anybody really aspires to, he was the most competitive guy I ever met in my life, or she had the most number of shoes of any person I've ever known. Although shoes are important. Shoes are really, really important. But I don't think anybody really aspires that's what they would be remembered for. And I think what we really do aspire to is that someone will say, that was a great human being. So that's my big thought for today. And this is Carol Bailey talking about happiness. And we're going to come back in a little while, and we're going to talk with Lama Sultram Alioni in a great conversation. We'll be right back.
As I said, yeah. Ra is excited to announce we are now offering massage. Our Elemental Nature Massage is a 60-minute personalized massage experience based upon the Aveda Elemental Nature philosophy and your favorite Aveda aromas. Depending upon your needs, a variety of massage techniques will be utilized. We are now offering this massage at $59, regularly $78. Book your appointment today. Call 425-284-0404. Or check out our website for online booking at rasalonspa.com.
You know, too many people in this world feel stuck. Emotional hijacks weigh them down, and change feels hard, even impossible. At Awakening Works, they understand the burden of these common problems, but there's nothing common about the way they solve them. Change can be easier, and life can be different. Awaken to your full potential again. Please join their founder, Susan Crampton Davis, on Chat with Women Network every second and fourth Thursday at 8 a.m. or visit them at awakeningworks.com to learn more. Do you get frustrated when your Facebook visitors don't click the like button on your business page? Would you like to make a great first impression, engage your visitors, and watch your fan base grow? Well, all you need to do is visit chatwithwomen.com and click on the green fan page mini website banner to find out more. And also receive a complimentary copy of The Mystery of Facebook Advertising Revealed. Gain attraction to your Facebook page by going through chatwithwomen.com.
Hi, I'm Pam.
And I'm Rochelle, and we've created the Chat with Women Network.
Do you have a burning, burning, burning desire to be a star? Are you interested in sharing your voice to thousands of listeners? Email us at info@chatwithwomen.com and find out how we can make that happen.
Join us on the Chat with Women Network and you will be seen and heard worldwide. So email us at info@chatwithwomen.com. That's info@chatwithwomen.com.
Learn how to be your personal best by building on your strengths and seeking joy in everyday life. Rediscover, reinvent, and renew yourself. Bounce Be Transformed shows you how. Visit their website, bouncebetransformed.com, and order their book. Then join the mailing list to receive notice of new programs. Find them at bouncebetransformed.com.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Shower the people you love with love. Show them.
This is Carol Bailey, and we're back talking about happiness, and I am extremely happy to have Lama Soltram Alioni talk with us today. Lama Soltram is, hi, first of all.
Hi.
There she is. Lama Soltram is a Western woman who, at a young age, went with her friend Victoris Hitchcock, who we'll talk about in a second, and they went to India, and Soltram had been introduced to Buddhism through a book that her grandmother gave her, and her visit to India started what has become a lifelong study and practice of Buddhism and ways that it can relate to people in the West. And Soltram's the author of two books, Women of Wisdom and Feeding Your Demons. So welcome, Soltram, here.
Thank you, Carol. My pleasure.
One of the things that I think is important for people to know about you, because you've become a really accomplished Buddhist scholar, and many people that are listening won't ever be a Buddhist scholar. And so I think it's really important for people to know that primarily, you're a Western woman. So I thought maybe you could talk about, just briefly, because I have so many things I want to ask you about, but just briefly about your own journey as a woman and being a mother, and how that has really accelerated your understanding of Buddhism and the necessity in the West for people to have the teachings of Buddhism.
Mm-hmm. So I went to India when I was 19 with Victor actress who I guess you're going to talk about later.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about her. I'll talk about her movie.
I was really searching. It wasn't a tourist trip to India. It was the late 60s, and so many people were searching in a variety of ways. And for me, it was always a spiritual search. And I guess you could say it was a search for happiness, because I wasn't finding wisdom or happiness in my culture or in school. So I left the university and traveled to India and met the Tibetan people. And for me, that was really life-changing. At the time, I only knew that I was extremely attracted to them. But as my life has evolved, I realized that it was a deep karmic connection with the Tibetan people, which has endured now. I'm 65, and so since I was 19 until now, that really has been a thread that has been unshaken. So I became the first American Tibetan Buddhist nun in January of 1970, and I was ordained by His Holiness Karmapa, who is the second highest lama in Tibet. And he recognized me in a large group of people. He was giving an empowerment, a public empowerment, and apparently, of course, I didn't know at the time, but he pointed me out in the crowd and said, she's been my disciple in a past life, and she will come, and she will become a nun. And so that happened.
And weren't you the first American that he had actually ordained?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
but what was that experience like? There you were, 19 years old. This amazing man from another culture is looking at you and saying, I recognize you as a student from a past life. What was that like?
He didn't say that immediately. What happened was I started having a feeling that there was something I needed to do after I met him. He was in Kathmandu, Nepal, for the first time in 13 years when I arrived overland from England. So we had driven through all those countries that you couldn't think about driving through now, like Iraq and Iran, Afghanistan,
Pakistan, right.
India, and so on. So I arrived at Christmas 1969, and he had just arrived as well. And I went, you know, along with friends to see this lama. I had been 6 months in a Tibetan Buddhist monastery in Scotland with Trungpa Rinpoche, who was very key figure in bringing Tibetan Buddhism to the West. However, I had never met the Karmapa, and when I met him, it was a kind of resonance that I had never felt before, and then I had this feeling there was something I was supposed to do, and it got very pressing in the sense that I had this feeling, what am I supposed to do? There's something I'm supposed to do,
right.
And I couldn't sleep.
Almost agitated.
Exactly, yeah, agitated. And then I had been doing a sadhana, which is a spiritual practice from Trungpa Rinpoche, and in it, the Karmapa is mentioned again and again, and then there's a line that says, the only offering I can make is to follow your example. And so I read that one day. I was doing that sadhana every day, and I thought, oh, I'm supposed to become a nun because he's a monk. So that would be following his example into monasticism. And so I went to him and looked at him. I just walked in, you know, didn't do the usual greeting formalities, and I had long braids at the time, and I motioned to cut them off and shave my head. And he looked at me with this amazing look, which I'll never forget, which it seemed as though he was seeing all of me, all of my lifetime. And then he nodded his head and he said, yes, I'll meet you in Bodh Gaya. He wanted to ordain me there. He could have ordained me in Nepal, but he wanted to ordain me in Bodh Gaya, which is where the Buddha reached enlightenment. And so I gathered my robes and said goodbye to my friends and went to Bodh Gaya and was ordained there. And so after my ordination, there was a Bhutanese doctor who traveled with His Holiness, and he said, you know, he had seen you in the crowd, and he told me that story about him recognizing me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that didn't happen until after the ordination.
One thing I was thinking about you this morning is that because your grandmother had given you a book on Buddhism, somehow you had permission from your family to pursue this path. Were you scared about what they were going to think, or was there ever any pushback when you told them you were going to become a nun? Were you afraid they were going to reject you or be mad at you?
Well, I didn't tell them before I became a nun. I told them afterwards. and for a while, they wouldn't tell their friends. They just said, oh, she's studying Buddhism in India.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I eventually came back, my father wanted to put an article in the paper, you know, before I went downtown in my robes.
Right.
But my family's pretty unusual in that my mother was a pilot and walked all over southern Russia at the age of 19. My grandfather had actually walked into Tibet from Darjeeling. And so my grandmother was the fifth woman in history to get a PhD from Harvard. And so our family were already sort of explorers, pushing the edges, and especially intellectually. And so there wasn't any sense of they would reject me, but more an interest in what I was doing and trying to find out about it. So my mother came to visit me at a certain point. And
I just think that's so important for all the listeners, is that the fact that you felt some emotional freedom to pursue this calling that was coming from inside of you, that you weren't afraid about it. And so often in our families, we have so many expectations of other people, and we limit them with our expectations. So I was just thinking this morning about you, that you really had the support and permission of your family to be who you were and follow what was inside of you, and how important that was.
Mm. Well, it wasn't quite that simple,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that when I first went to India, they had a certain idea of what I should do, and that would be some sort of social work kind of thing in India. And I was really drawn to spirituality and to the Tibetans. And I had to sort of run away from the consul general where I was staying with Vicky, whose father was the consul general in Calcutta. And it was a real individuation process from my family, in that sense that they did have an idea of who I was and what I should be, which wasn't a bad thing, you know, but it wasn't who I was. And so there was a process where I had to individuate from that. And I think that's an important thing to understand for all parents, that children have to become individuals. And the process of individuation from the family, from the parents, if the parents have a strong idea of who that person is or who they should be, becomes problematic. But if they allow that natural process to take place, then the individual doesn't feel blocked and can come into who they really are,
right,
or who they want to be.
Right. Trust their own instincts.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward a little bit to another very, very interesting phase, which is when Buddhism did start to come to America and bring so much richness to our culture, which now, I was saying before, there's a yoga studio and a meditation workshop everywhere, it seems, now in just the 30, 40 years that Buddhism has come to America. And I did want to mention that Victoris Hitchcock, who is the person that Saltram went to India with early on, she has just done a new movie that's called When the Iron Bird Flies. And there was a prophecy in Tibet that when the Iron Bird flies, that the teachings of the Buddha would expand. And so, Lama Sultram, you were there for all of that happening. And maybe you can just talk mm-hmm. briefly about that, because I really want to ask you primarily about the techniques for transformation that you've come up with. Mm-hmm. But just when Buddhism came to America, what was it like to be a part of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the actual prophecy is from Padmasambhava or Guru Rinpoche, and it is, when the iron bird flies in the sky, Buddhism will travel to the land of the red-faced people.
Right.
And so I was really on that cusp, I guess you could say, and have really spent my life bridging East and West because of that. And I grew up in a time when there were no Buddhist centers and no yoga centers anywhere. And so when I first became interested in this, and when I first came back from India, it had begun to sprout. And so, I mean, if you ask me how was that, I think it's been a very exciting time. Because as it comes to the West, we have to ask the questions of what parts of this are relevant in the West and what parts of it are perhaps cultural to whichever country it comes from, whether it's Thailand or Burma or Nepal or Tibet or India. And so in a way, we, as we often do in America, are creating an amalgam of Buddhist teachings that work in the West. And I think we're still very much in that process of seeing what works here, what's relevant in people's lives.
How to adapt it, really.
Adapt it, yeah, and at the same time to really not throw the baby out with the bathwater, thinking, oh, I don't need to do that, or that's not relevant. So it's a delicate process of transference of a very, in the case of Tibetan Buddhism, a very esoteric, very complex, highly developed philosophical and meditation system into our culture.
Right. So let's take a break real quick, and we'll be back in just a minute. This is Carol Bailey talking with Lama Sultram Alioni about happiness.
Learn how to be your personal best by building on your strengths and seeking joy in everyday life. Rediscover, reinvent, and renew yourself. Bounce Be Transformed shows you how. Visit their website, bouncebetransformed.com, and order their book. Then join the mailing list to receive notice of new programs. Find them at bouncebetransformed.com.
Hi, I'm Pam.
And I'm Rochelle. And together we created Chat with Women Network.
We have an opportunity for you to be a star on our radio network or create your own video that will be seen and heard on chatwithwomen.com, your website, and YouTube.
So send us an email to info@chatwithwomen.com. That's info@chatwithwomen.com to find out more.
So what Pinot do you pair with pumps? Do you pair a Merlot or a Cabernet with stilettos? These questions and more will be answered at the 2012 Wine, Women, and Shoes event benefiting Seattle Children's Home, Thursday, May 3rd, from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Four Seasons Hotel in Seattle. Grab your girlfriends, put on your sassiest shoes, and enjoy an evening of wine tasting, fashion, and fundraising. For more information, visit seattlechildrenshome.org.
Wink lash extensions. We've been talking about Tova for a year now or more, about a year and a half, and that she does lash extensions. We love them. We look awake all the time. But what is the thing that I want to talk about that is so exciting? She opened up a new salon in Bellevue, and she offers pedicures and manicures express. So you're getting your eyelashes done, and you're getting your toes and hands done at the same time. So I chose to try the pedicure. It is absolutely the best pedicure. You know, when you get a little older, your feet get a little drier. I walked out of there and I have baby feet.
I wanted to do the whole treatment. I did the mani and I did the pedi, and my feet, my heels are still soft. It's unbelievable.
Well, you know what's so cool what she does? She sprays on a fluid or a powder or something, that she leaves on for a few minutes and it just, it gets rid of the calluses. Mm-hmm. And then she just sort of rubs them off.
Mm-hmm. We love everything about our Tova.
So go to winklashextensions.com.
There you go.
Are you looking to make more money? Come to the Make More Money Expo, April 26th at Pickering Barn in Issaquah. With 40 self-employment opportunities on site, business resources, and seminar speakers, you'll be certain to cash in on your chosen business venture. Go to MakeMoreMoneyExpo.com now to pre-register for this free event and a chance to win a Kindle Fire. Don't forget, that's MakeMoreMoneyExpo.com.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Shower the people you love with love. Show them the way that you feel. Things are gonna work out fine.
This is Carol Bailey, and I'm talking about happiness with Lama Soltram Alioni this morning. For all the listeners, there's no way we can cover all of the richness that Lama Soltram has to offer because she's been doing this for years and years, and she's a very, very special person. If you want to know more than what we can cover in the show, you can go to taramandala.org on the internet. You can also buy her book, Women of Wisdom, which is an incredible book. As we all know, there aren't that many stories out there about women spiritual masters, and Women of Wisdom is such a book. And also, what we're going to talk about later in the show, the book Feeding Your Demons, which is a book that Lama Soltram published a couple of years ago about how we can all work with our own challenging emotions. So, Lama Soltram, I wanted to ask you, from the Buddhist perspective, what is happiness? What does that mean?
Well, that's an interesting question from a Buddhist point of view, because that was really the question that the Buddha was asking when he left home, and it drove his entire search, which led eventually to enlightenment. It was, what is true happiness? What is lasting happiness? And what is the cause of suffering? And so I think what's different about happiness from a Buddhist point of view, from our normal conception of happiness, is that our normal conception of happiness is that we become happy because we get what we want, whether it's materially, whether we get the house we want, or we get the job we want, or we get the money we want, we get the food we want, we get the clothes we want, we get the looks we want, or whatever. We think that if we get what we want, we will be happy. And what occurs, and we can certainly see this every day in the papers with famous people who get all those things, which seems like we want, is that it actually doesn't bring happiness. And so the Buddha was asking that question when he left home, and he was a prince with all the material benefits available at that time in India, which was 500 BC, so a long time ago. Buddhism is a very old tradition. And he was asking that question of what is the cause of suffering and what is true lasting happiness. And what he discovered eventually through his process was what he called the middle way. And it was a way between extreme asceticism and renunciation and indulgence. It was a path in which clinging and attachment is let go of, and the consciousness or the mind or the awareness becomes aware of itself and begins to rest in itself. So normally our consciousness or our mind is going out through the senses or through mental conceptualization and grasping at one thing or another, whether it's visual or through the ears or touch or conceptually. We're always moving out. And right now, all of you who are listening, if you just think about how right now you're reaching out with your ears just to hear this, and you're grasping it in some way, and you're hoping it's going to bring you happiness. So we have that outward movement constantly. Even at night, our minds are going and our dreams are moving out. And so there's this process of the consciousness moving out and grasping at what it thinks will bring it pleasure. And it's also grasping at what it thinks might threaten it. And it's ignoring everything else. And so what the Buddha taught was to release that outward grasping and to let awareness rest in itself. Or you could say to turn awareness around from the outward motion or that outward grasping movement, to turn that around and to look at itself. And in the teachings, it talks about when awareness sees awareness, and you might try this if you're not driving, turn your awareness to look at awareness. And as you do that, as you turn awareness to look at awareness, see what you see. What do you see? What do you experience? And if you do that, what you experience from the Buddhist point of view, or what the Buddha taught, is you experience emptiness and luminosity. So that you see that awareness is essentially empty, not in the literal sense of an empty pocket or an empty room, but empty of all of the concepts that we have attached to it. And it's also luminous, that there's a clarity, there's a light, there's a brightness to our awareness. And so meditation is really that process of turning the mind to look at the mind and then resting. And there's many methods that lead up to that. There's concentration on the breath or one-pointedness and whole process to allow you to actually learn to rest. And from the Buddhist point of view, that resting, that release of all clinging, of all attachment, is nirvana, is freedom. And it is lasting. So what we usually attach to is impermanent and conditioned. And so we grasp at something, and then it changes, even good things. And there's a disappointment. There's a feeling of dissatisfaction. And that's what the Buddha talked about a lot, and how to find true happiness or true satisfaction is through this release of grasping and a learning to rest in our true condition, which is luminous, clear, and vast.
So when you say that, for people that are listening that might not have meditation experience, when you say turning the mind back, is that like taking your awareness and just looking back at your own awareness and just sort of noticing, wow, I have awareness? is that what that's about?
That's how it begins, yeah.
And then,
another way to say it is consciousness of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was 15, shortly after my grandmother gave me that book, I was reading a book about semantics and words, and somehow, through something I read, I had a consciousness of consciousness. And perhaps those that are listening have had their own experiences of that without having the language
to describe it.
It is actually a natural state. It is we're just looking at our true condition. And so many people experience it, but there's a transmission called pointing out instruction, where the nature of mind is actually pointed out. And then there is the looking at that and the experience of it. So it's a bit like we have this treasure that that's right under our pillow, and we're sleeping on it every night. But every day we go out everywhere, all over the world, seeking the treasure. But it's actually right under our own pillow.
It's right there. It's right there. I want to ask you one quick question. I could talk about that subject forever because that's really the heart of the whole thing.
It is.
But people need a process. They need a way to, because especially in our culture, we don't have any support for that. We don't even have words for it. And so you have come up with structures and processes and ways for people to actually find out the experience you're talking about right now. So quickly, before we take a break, I wanted just to have you say a few words about the intersection between psychology and Buddhism and what they each sort of bring. And then after the break, we'll talk about feeding your demons and what that process is about. But before that, just for the listeners to kind of understand the worlds of Buddhism and psychology and where they come together.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has really been a field of my research for many years. And it came out of my experience of doing a lot of meditation, living in India and living in Nepal and Tibet and so on, and then coming back to the West, becoming a mother and having three children, and realizing that in some ways my emotional body hadn't been touched by all that meditation, and that I think any of you who are parents know that suddenly when you become a parent, you realize you have lots of emotions you didn't realize you had before, or they're activated.
Right.
And so I began to ask the question, how can the whole being evolve? And how can we bring the emotional body along with the spiritual body? I guess you could call them bodies or parts of ourselves. And so the real goal of psychology is for worldly happiness. We go to a therapist because we're unhappy, and the therapist works with us to try to find relative happiness in our lives. Whereas the goal of Buddhism is to find absolute happiness, which is free of all conditions. And by conditions, I mean the coming and going, the birth and death and so on. The happiness which is beyond all that and endures beyond any conditioned object or conditioned existence. And so, however, if we just focus on that more absolute level of happiness, the emotional body isn't necessarily developing. And so I think that there can be a beautiful marriage of the Western wisdom that's come through understanding the mind and emotions and conflict resolution and so on, all those really quite amazing methods that have developed in the West with this profound 2,500-year-old tradition from India, which is Buddhism. And so Buddhism has the goal of absolute unconditioned happiness. Psychology has the goal of relative happiness.
And that's such a great way of saying it.
So when those two things come together, there's the potentiality of both of those, relative and absolute happiness.
Supporting each other.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a real quick break and come back. This is Carol Bailey talking with Lama Soltram Alioni, and you can find her at taramandala.org.
Things are going to work out fine if you only will. Do as I say.
It's uncertain where healthcare in America is going, so there's only one way to keep yourself out of the doctor's office. And that, my friends, is to take personal responsibility for your health and wellness by calling My Chef by Request. Tom Hutler here. I've always had some excess weight to lose, and getting type 2 diabetes in my later years is something I want to avoid. I discovered My Chef by Request. They deliver fresh, gourmet, delicious meals to my doorstep every day, designed to help me lose weight. You heard me right. They deliver fresh daily. My Chef by Request combines the right proteins, carbohydrates, and favorable fats to balance your insulin levels. That's the key. Many people lose 2 to 5 pounds in their first week. I lost 7 pounds in the first 4 days, and I'm way more energetic. The menu's incredible. The food's delicious. And My Chef by Request even provides a personal consultant who answers all my questions and gives me encouragement. Take control of your personal healthcare future. Call My Chef by Request today and get 2 free days of service with your first 14-day program. It's the best investment I have ever made in myself. These are local folks, so call them today. 877-878-5777 or visit MyChefByRequest.com. That's MyChefByRequest.com.
Do you get frustrated when your Facebook visitors don't click the like button on your business page? Would you like to make a great first impression, engage your visitors, and watch your fan base grow? Well, all you need to do is visit ChatWithWomen.com and click on the green fan page mini website banner to find out more. And also receive a complimentary copy of The Mystery of Facebook Advertising Revealed. Gain attraction to your Facebook page by going through chatwithwomen.com. Are you overwhelmed? Do you struggle to say no? Does an inner critic make you question yourself? Are you sad behind a happy mask? Stephanie Owens of Pleaseaholics will show you how to make life easier and more joyful with practical wisdom, abundant compassion, and an occasional kick in the butt. Get started today with your free CD at pleaseaholics.com. That's pleaseaholics.com. Does your organization have sufficient self-starters to successfully drive your bottom line, accelerate business initiatives, and increase performance by investing in your employees? Unlock the potential to your organization's success, your people. Dr. Julie Miller helps organizations create an environment in which self-starters grow. Just go to secretsofselfstarters.com. That's secretsofselfstarters.com and click on the free assessment button today.
Hi, I'm Pam.
And I'm Rochelle of the Chat with Women Network.
And we are here to remind you to listen to our experts Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m. Our experts will share with you their knowledge about life, believing in yourself, kindness, fashion, food and wine, and much more. Join us every weekday to learn, grow, change your lives, and have some fun.
If you want to hear the show again and again, go to chatwithwomen.com. That's chatwithwomen.com.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Shower the people you love with love. Show them the way that you feel.
This is Carol Bailey talking about happiness with Lama Sultram Alioni. And we're getting close to the end of the hour, and I wanted to make sure that we talk about the process in your book, Feeding Your Demons, of working with emotions. Can you talk just a little bit for the listeners about the process that you've developed for how people can really, really deal with conflicting emotions within themselves?
Our demons are not gargoyles sticking out of the side of the buildings or little red men with forked tails or anything like that. Our demons, in the sense that I teach it, are our addictions, our fears, our compulsions, our illnesses, our longings. Demons are anything which keeps us from being present in this moment. Everyone has demons. And it's actually a word that is used quite a bit in the media. If you begin to become aware of it, which of course I did when I was writing my book, it's used so often. You know, Michael Jackson died because of his demons, or the veterans coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan are plagued by their demons. So we actually understand what this means. It means that there's something that is dragging us down in a way which makes us afraid or in some way impedes our happiness. And so the teaching that I developed comes from an 11th century yogini from Tibet named Machig Laptun. And she was quite an amazing person in herself. And she developed this method of feeding, not fighting, the demons. And so in my work, I translated that into a process where you find the demon in your body, in the sense of, maybe those that are listening could just think about this as I speak, you find the demon in your body by thinking about a fear, or perhaps it's a chronic illness or an addiction, and find where you hold that most strongly in your body. You know, you think about one of your demons. It could be jealousy, it could be fear, anything that impedes you, that sort of bugs you. Feel where you hold that in your body, and then you allow that to take form in front of you as a personified being, not necessarily a person. And if it's something around another person, the other person isn't the demon, although we would like to think so. But really, it's the feeling that you have inside you about that person. So you personify that in front of you, and then you ask it what it wants and what it needs and how it will feel when it gets what it needs. And then you change places, and you actually physically change places, and you imagine yourself, or you become that being, that demon. And after you really feel you're in that body, then you answer those questions. What I want from you is, what I need from you is, and what I will feel when I get what I need is. And once that process has happened, you come back into your original position, you see the demon in front of you again, and then you dissolve your own body into a nectar or a substance which embodies the feeling the demon will have if its need is fulfilled. And then you feed that nectar to the demon. And you feed it to complete satisfaction. That's very important. You don't just give it a little. You actually completely satiate it with that substance, that nectar of the feeling it will have when it gets what it needs. And what happens in that process is the demon transforms. And it transforms, it either disappears into disappears into a puff of smoke or melts or in some way just dissolves completely, or it turns into another being when it's completely satisfied. And that being is what we call the ally. So that the ally is actually the same energy that's locked up in the demon, which is transformed by getting the feeling that it will have when it gets what it needs. By receiving that feeling, the ally manifests. And then there's a process of dialoguing with the ally. And then in the very end of these five steps, it's a five-step process, the ally dissolves into you, and then you, with the integrated ally energy, also dissolve. And you rest in that open awareness which is present when your body and the ally's integrated energy dissolves, and you rest there. And that's the fifth step.
So for all the listeners, that beautiful process for working with your own emotions is in Lama Soltram's book, Feeding Your Demons. You can also have a wonderful experience going to Taramandala, which is in southwestern Colorado. It is one of the most beautiful retreat centers in America. And The summer offerings are on Tara Mandala's website, taramandala.org. There are also CDs that you can buy if you're not able to go to Tara Mandala. But if you are really serious about developing yourself and finding ultimate happiness and cultivating the human qualities, Tara Mandala is a place that is dedicated to that through all kinds of programs. So I want to thank Lama Soltram so much today for sharing all of this with us, and blessings to you for everything you're doing, Lama Soltram.
Thank you, Carol, and it's been a real pleasure to connect with you and all of the listeners, and I hope to meet some of you at some point.
I hope to make it there this summer myself. Thank you. This is widely known.